we have been suffering. Despite the fact that the wealth is from this part of the country. Mm-hmm. But there is no meaningful development in Niger Delta area. We have been pushed to the world, seriously, mm-hmm. by the oil communities and the federal government. Hence, we decided on our own to form a formidable body to fight for our development.
It's the end of the world as we know it. I feel fine.
Good morning, slaves, and welcome to another edition of It's the End of the World as We Know It and I Feel Fine, the megaphone of the motherfucking resistance. I am your host, The Stimulator, and this week started with a tragedy in Colombia. The flying coke-sniffing murderers, otherwise known as the Colombian Air Force, bombed an indigenous village, injuring 4 people, including a 20-day-old baby. The Colombian military claimed that FARC guerrillas were in the area, but the community says that the attack was in retaliation for the resistance to a gold mine being developed by U.S.-based Mural Mining Corporation, an outfit with a spotty human rights record in the area and a cozy relationship with the corrupt Colombian government. In the U.S., a tree sit that halted the coal mining operations of those greedy uncles from Massey Energy ended with the arrest of Amber Nichman and Eric Blevins. These brave mountain defenders have vowed not to give up the fight. Here is A Planet, one of the tree sitters who was forced down earlier last week.
I feel like there's a huge crime going on, and I have a right as a citizen to get in the way of a crime taking place.
Kicking it up a notch, an oil pipeline belonging to Royal Dutch Shell was sabotaged in the Niger Delta, forcing these nature-destroying flea-ridden surfers to halt their profitable operations, albeit temporarily. The Movement for the Emancipation of the Niger Delta, or MEND, did not take responsibility and said that the brave act was carried out by freelance commandos. But MEND did promise to continue its campaign of sabotage against the oil industry. In case you didn't know, Nigeria has been hyper-exploited and overpolluted by the oil-extracting activities of companies such as Shell. After the extreme repression of non-violent liberation movements, which culminated in the execution of renowned activist Kensaro Wiwa, Nigerian freedom fighters got sick of the bullshit and armed themselves to the teeth and formed MEND. MEND has been fighting a guerrilla war against Shell and the corrupt government of Nigeria since 2006.
The generation before us tried to adopt what we call peaceful resolution, but the federal government designed special strategies to combat us with their forces. Hence, we decided on our own to resort to this type of nation.
And speaking of pipeline bombers, convicted saboteur Wiebo Ludwig was detained and interrogated and then released by the RCMP in connection to the bombings of Encana pipelines in BC. Apparently, the RCMP had DNA evidence against Ludwig, and it did not prove sufficient for the charges to stick. Some speculate that with the Olympics coming to BC, it would not look for the RCMP to have a so-called terrorist loosen their territory. On the subject of Olympic security, the city of Vancouver, where I live, looks a lot less like an Olympic host and more like the world's largest donut consumer. Cops, cops, and more cops, and the motherfucking
5 concretes of death
have not even started. Olympic security is out of control. But hey, they had to spend $1 billion somewhere. Snow tanks, frogmen, surveillance balloons, pork choppers, and more video cameras than Best Buy. And guess what their biggest threat is? Not terrorists, not man-made climate change, not even Carrot Top, but, drumroll please, you guessed it, protesters. That's right, $1 billion in security budget to intimidate the motherfucking resistance, which included a visit to yours truly. That's right, the Olympics came a-knocking, but there was nobody home. The Vancouver 2010 Integrated Security Unit has been harassing anti-Olympic activists, their families, and girlfriends since last year. In response, the motherfucking resistance held an unpermitted torch-lit march through the streets of Van City to show the motherfuckers we ain't scared.
We know that during the Olympics there's gonna be 16,000 military, police, and security personnel. We know that they're criminalizing the poor and putting them in jail in the downtown east side. But what we gotta remember is it's like in the spirit of everybody around the world, when the system tries to oppress us, we have to fight back.
There's a little truth. Open up your eye while you're checking out the boombox. Check the exercise. Check the word overseer. Like a sample. Repeat it very quickly and approve for example. Overseer. 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 Overseer.
Acts of rebellion in the face of police repression inspire me to never give up. That's why I do what I do, to remind myself and others that there are more of us out there, and that if we stick together and have each other's backs, we can crack the code of this fake reality and defeat our virtual overseers. Last year, students of the California State University system took up the time-honored tradition of occupying campus buildings, like this one in Berkeley, California. The California occupations inspired acts of solidarity all over North America and as far as Vienna. As fun as that looks, I wanted to find out what was behind these mischievous acts of resistance. To get to the bottom of this, I spoke with V, Stevie, and Tashton. Hey y'all, how the fuck are you?
Fantastic.
Keeping it going.
I'm pissed.
Okay, V, let's dial it down a bit. Take a deep breath. Okay. So why the fuck occupy?
So occupation is a tactic that's been used successfully by various movements. We've been taking over spaces as more than just a bargaining chip. We're using spaces that are supposed to be for us. University condones student organizing claims to be progressive while charging students to hold general assemblies, regulating their activities, and cutting funding, especially to marginalized groups. Occupation is the only means for truly autonomous organizing that everyone can participate in, and that's why universities are so frightened by it.
And what is your beef with the governor?
Well, we certainly have beef with the governor, but he's not the only culprit in a charade for public education. University administration has signed agreements to cut state funding as well as raise tuition in November of 2009. He's announced a plan to cut prison funding and funnel that money toward universities. This only reinforces the trend of privatization and concentrates effects on prisoners and prison workers who are already suffering.
Who are your allies in this struggle?
This movement is connected to and in solidarity with others, and students are working to collaborate more across artificial boundaries, which is great and is needed. Our movement is not solely a student movement, and there's been a lot of solidarity between campus workers, teachers, and students. And this latest round of cuts has led to workers and teachers taking pay cuts and being fired. Campus labor unions played a huge part in organizing people to protest at the UC Regents meeting at UCLA November 9th. So we're all supporting each other in this fight, which is only one part of a larger struggle.
A little bird told me that something big is going down on March 4th.
March 4th is going to be a generalized day of action across the state for public education. Many, many K through college schools will be involved in one capacity or another, and we're hoping that some radical ass is going to go down. But you can go to occupyca.wordpress.com for more up-to-date information as the date gets nearer.
Are you trying to spark something bigger here?
So, it is true that this is sort of a grand scheme to generalize rebellion. What we're fighting against affects everyone. And it goes far beyond our campus and schools in general. We can't just hope that we can suffer through this bullshit and come out unscathed before it gets even worse. We've got to respond together, do it bigger and better, and generally get as hypey as possible all the time. And you know, occupations and general assemblies are pretty straightforward and repeatable ways to engage in this struggle, and it needs not only grow and strengthen on campus, but all over this motherfucking world.
I am not anti-war! Because sometimes it's necessary to go to war to defend your people and your territories!
It's the end of the world as we know it. I feel fine.
Good morning, slaves, and welcome to another edition of It's the End of the World as We Know It, and I Feel Fine, the megaphone of the motherfucking resistance. I am your host, The Stimulator, and for the past 10 days, I've been holed up at the motherfucking VMC with a team of video ninjas covering the motherfucking resistance against
the five cock rings of death.
Here's a roundup from the streets of resistance. On Friday, the first day of action, the motherfucking resistance successfully blocked the Olympic torch from passing through the downtown east side, Canada's poorest neighborhood outside native reserves. Here's a bird's eye view from my main man, Shane K. The torch then tried to pass through my hood of Commercial Drive. The motherfucking resistance was there to let the torchbearer know that the Olympics were not welcome on the drive. When I asked the torchbearer what she knew about the protest, she responded,
I can't come on everything. I don't know anything.
The resistance chased the torch out of Commercial Drive, and the torchbearer had to be escorted by the VPD.
Not the Olympic torch!
Later that evening, the resistance gathered in front of the Vancouver Art Gallery, or VAG, for a massive party against
the five cock rings of death.
Here's Harjeet Graywell of the Olympic Resistance Network talking about the greenwashing of the games.
I want to also talk to you today about the supposed green games. Do you think the games are green?
No!
I don't think so. Green means money to the games. That's all they're about. What we really want to talk about here today is that every single thing that the Olympics is involved in, the corporate sponsors, the federal government, the provincial government, the Olympic infrastructure, all of it is destroying the environment. We have supposed environmentalists like Zipporah Berman giving Gordon Campbell an award in Copenhagen. What was that award for? For tar sands pipelines going through BC? For coal mines opening up in BC? For highway expansions? Was it for the mine that's going to destroy a freshwater lake? Gordon Campbell is the biggest greenwasher on the planet!
This protest was a culmination of over 5 years of organizing. All expectations about crowd size were surpassed, and the family-friendly march went off without a hitch. But do you hear about the anti-Olympic movement from CNN, Fox, or NBC on Friday? Hell mother no. Saturday? That's a different story.
We're taking back your factories, and we're taking back your streets. We're taking back your golf courses and growing food to eat. So all you in the underground, it's time to rise above. Tonight we're gonna pop it up and give it up.
That's right, you smash a few windows and corporate bootlickers from the ass-crunching corporate media start paying attention. The heart attack action aimed to clog the arteries of capitalism, i.e. to cause a ginormous traffic jam to block punk Olympic spectators from getting to Whistler, a town where massive environmental destruction has taken place to host
the five cock rings of death.
I spoke with hip-hop artist Illogic and Testament about what the fuck went down on Saturday. Hey y'all, how the fuck are you?
Doing great.
Yeah, you know, it's good.
And where the fuck are we now?
Right now we're at the Vancouver Media Co-op. This is where, you know, everyone's getting their footage together and putting out awesome independent media. Like, right here we got the Balaclava, this today's edition of the Balaclava, which is a daily kind of report of what's going down in the streets here. The people are doing audio, people are doing video, photo, text, you know, everything's going down here.
Yeah, the info war continues, you know, like we got to get that info out to people all across the world right now because this is our weapon we can use against them.
So what the fuck went down at the heart attack?
This was the heart attack demo. This was, you know, the intention was to give capitalism a heart attack, you know, clog the arteries. You know, that was successfully done throughout the majority of the protest.
It was mayhem today, yo. People masked up, black bloc styles, you know, marching, taking the streets and causing some mayhem.
Thank you.
It was pretty hectic, yo. We had like mad amount of riot cops all around. At first, the police presence was pretty minimal, but then when we got downtown towards the bridge to Whistler, they started coming out in serious presence. And when the riot cops came out, they started really mashing up people. We saw some really brutal arrests.
Even as people were trying to disperse, there was cop cars all over that neighborhood, just like people jumping out, snatching people that are like as they're trying to disperse. So yeah, it was pretty hectic at that point. They weren't fucking around anymore. They wanted to like take as many people as they could.
What kind of gun is it?
It's less lethal.
Oh, it's less lethal?
Yeah.
Walking over to the sidewalk for me, please, ma'am.
Not at all.
You know, you're walking between a bunch of policemen like this. Come on.
Am I supposed to be scared of you guys?
No, you're not. Can you step up on the sidewalk? Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
The five Cochranes of Death
spent a billion smackers on security. How could a handful of skinny anarchists foil these motherfucking fascists?
You know, they've been spending billions of dollars on this. So they've been training hard for this, so I'm sure a lot of them had their peckers up about this, but we gave them our resistance. Our fist was raised high.
Anytime there's a little smashy smash, smash it. Smash it.
Smash it.
Punk-ass liberals, or social democrats as Canadians call them, start putting up a hissy fit and talk about violence. Like these motherfuckers. Trader right here, David Eby, executive director of BC Civil Liberties, or BCCLA, and the supposed lawyer of the Olympic Resistance Movement. After the Hudson Bay Company's windows were smashed, this poor excuse of a lawyer said he was sickened by the action and called the symbolic rearrangement of molecules of inanimate objects violence. The sad thing is that in Canada we don't have radical lawyers like Larry Hyde from the National Lawyers Guild. The good thing is that since the BCCLA are a bunch of sellout motherfuckers and tools of the state, now people are motivated to start something like the motherfucking NLG. In case you didn't know, here's Larry explaining what the motherfucking NLG is.
National Lawyers Guild is a independent radical bar in the States that formed when the ABA wouldn't admit black lawyers back in the 30s. We consider ourselves the legal arm of the movement. So we're out here to defend people's right to be in the streets and do what they need to do, and to represent them afterwards if need be. And we believe in a fundamental radical reorganization of legal work and as I said, to defend the movement.
Larry used to do volunteer work for the BCCLA until he heard that trader David Eby denounced a heart attack action to the vomit-inducing corporate media. Here's Larry explaining why he told us punk fuckers to eat a bowl of puke.
BCCLA yesterday denounced the protest on Saturday that they weren't at, that the organizers pointedly asked them not to show up at, and that they really know nothing about, and insisted that the cops were restrained. It is not the job of legal support to be the free speech police. We're not there to editorialize on whether we like a demonstration or not. We're there to defend the demonstrators, period. And I saw what happened on Saturday, and I might not break windows myself, but I understood, you know, people do what they do. It is not our job to decide that they're wrong. It is our job to defend them. There are people in jail now that BCCLA is supposed to be providing legal support for, and instead of doing that, they're denouncing them and saying that the cops are restrained, which gives the cops green light to go after them, and the Crown green light to prosecute them, and you don't do that. They're so worried about their own damn reputation that they're not worrying about the people they're supposed to be defending. And as a lawyer, I frankly think it's unethical, and that they should be disciplined by the Law Society for doing that. You don't denounce your own clients.
Finally, I asked Larry to send a shout out to the from the BC Civil Liberties.
They're wrong. We told them they're wrong. As soon as you set up a dichotomy between good protesters and bad protesters, you don't get to control where that line is. The police will set that line where they want to set it. When you make this distinction, you give them license to decide, oh, They're sitting in the road. Bad protesters. We can attack them. Oh, they're setting up a tent city. Bad protesters. They're not orderly. It accomplishes nothing. It has to be a united movement. Sometimes there are tactics you like. Sometimes there are tactics you don't like. It's not our job to decide that. We're not the organizers. We are the lawyers. The organizers need to decide what they need to do, and it's our job to then defend them.
When sellout comrades start denouncing the brave actions of the motherfucking resistance, it helps to find a friendly voice to validate your thoughts and give you some comfort. When I am feeling down, I can always count on Gord Hill to pump my veins with some radical analysis. Here's Gord giving us some motherfucking knowledge during Monday's StopWar.ca rally.
To begin with my presentation, I would like to make a controversial statement, which is, I am not anti-war. Because sometimes it's necessary to go to war to defend your people and your territories. But I understand that when StopWar.ca says they are anti-war, they are talking about anti-colonial war, anti-imperialist war, because that is what is occurring in Afghanistan. It's a colonial invasion and occupation of another people's country. Or it's a security operation, or it's a stability operation. Here in British Columbia, Indigenous peoples have suffered over 150 years of colonial invasion and occupation. Our people suffered over 90% loss of their population through biological warfare, through Royal Navy gunboats and Marines.
Shame.
As our military resistance was reduced, the colonial regime at first made up of the Hudson's Bay Company, today one of the main corporate sponsors of the 2010 Winter Olympics. The colonial government was able to impose the Indian Act Band Council system, the reservations, the residential schools, where they colonized and assimilated generations of Indigenous children and youth. The result today of this colonial history is that Indigenous people suffer the highest rates of suicide, unemployment, poverty, lack of education, homelessness, disease, poor health. The 2010 Winter Olympics wants to conceal this colonial history and the social conditions that Indigenous people live under. And to do this, they've employed the Indian Act Band Council collaborators who comprise the four host First Nations. The Olympic police state that we see before us today is a sign of the future of what is to come. And we should all be very observant and take notes of this and begin to prepare ourselves and our social movements for this reality. For as the economic and environmental conditions continue to decline, as social conditions continue to decline, as military crises continue to expand, the only option left for the state will be the police state. Today we see the largest police security operation in Canadian history. $1 billion for security, for new weapons, new resources. They have 17,000 of these pig police, soldiers, security guards walking in our streets. But you know what? You know what? You seen on Saturday, militant resistance, $1 billion in security, 17,000 pig police, security, soldiers. They're gonna need more pigs. They're gonna need more pigs. This resistance is vital. It is how we will survive. That is what Indigenous history can also teach you. You must fight, you must resist.
That is how your people survive invasion, occupation, genocide. The limits of tyrants are set by those whom they attempt to tyrannize.
They're up the stage. Over the space. Where are you guys from?
The last time I was up on a stage here, that's when they set up that Olympic Countdown Club. February 12, 2007. One of my favorite signs I've seen that day was Countdown to Disaster. And that's what these Winter Olympics have been for the rich and powerful. A disaster. In conclusion, I would like to say, 2010.
And that about does it for this edition of It's the End of the World As We Know It and I Feel Fine. The following slaves kicked down some green paper to help make this coverage possible. Bruce, In the Silence, Sabina, Zachary, Rodney, Randon, Flynn, Martin, Jay, Ryan, Will, Ruben, and David from Pergo. Also, big m***ing ups to all the video ninjas who spent the week on our hot-ass bunkers to produce groundbreaking coverage from the streets of resistance. The motherfucking VNC, the Dominion Paper, Victoria in the Media, B Channel News, Rochester in the Media, Friendly Fire Collective, Pittsburgh in the Media, Upheaval Productions, SolidarityResponse.net, Pepper Spray Productions, Chico Area Pirate Punks, Peace Culture, Resist.ca, and the Downtown Eastside Residents Association. To comment on this show, or for links from our coverage of the Five Cock Rings of Death, just visit my website, Stimulator.tv. Now, where's my pillow?
Remember, kids, you can podcast high-quality video of this show at submedia.tv.